Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you so much for being here. To be honest, I didn't know that I was going to be here today. I really wrestled with whether to do a show today. As you heard, my dear friend Dori Monson died over the weekend. If you're not familiar with Dori Monson, Dori is, in addition to being, like a father figure to me, he is a longtime radio host in Seattle, going back to the early 1980s, and he hosted his own show, The Dori Monson Show, The Big Show, on Cairo Radio for almost 30 years. And I met Dori back, when I was 22 years old and first came to the city of Seattle for a job at Cairo Radio to do reporting. And he just instantly, like I said, just became this instant father figure, role model to me. You know, here I was, 22, in this big city, feeling like I was completely out of my league, and I probably was. And Dori took every opportunity he could to help me succeed, to help further my career. And I'll get into that in a moment, but I'll just tell you kind of what I know, because I know there are so many of you who have lived in Washington State in the Seattle area for some time and who Dori was just a part of your life. And I'm going to read comments from a lot of you coming up in a minute. And he's also just, his death is such a huge loss to Washington State for so many reasons, but he was a rare voice of dissent in this sea of liberal voices in the media. I mean, we live in Seattle. We live in a deep blue state. And so when you look at the media environment, you have all these people who are saying the same things, covering the same things, and Dori was the counterpoint. And he was a great counterpoint. He had this show he'd built around being a watchdog of government. He was incredibly effective, and he cared so much about the mission of his show and in holding the government accountable. I do want to tell you just a little bit about what I know about what happened, as much as I'm able to share. Certainly that information should come first and foremost from Dori's family, his wife, Suzanne. He's got three adult daughters, and your heart just breaks for them. So I was filling in for Dori on Friday. In fact, I had been filling in for him on his show the last 2 weeks. He, despite almost never taking any time off because of his commitment to the show and to his listeners, he took 2 weeks off during the holidays and asked if I'd fill in. I'm like, absolutely, go take vacation. You need it. You deserve it. The man worked so much. So I was filling in the last day for Dori this past Friday. And his producer Nicole was in there, and we got a message basically saying that something had happened to Dori, that he had some sort of cardiac episode and that he was at the hospital. And that's kind of all we knew for several hours. And so I was only an hour into a show, and we just sort of soldiered through waiting for news, hoping it wasn't that serious. And then it was just sort of a holding pattern over the weekend. I mean, a very small group of people knew that he was at the hospital, and we just hoped that, they were able to get him there fast enough that he would recover. And, Dori, he was such, it just still really does not feel real. He was such a fighter in everything he did. And so that's why I was just sort of over the weekend like, well, of course he's going to be okay. Of course he's going to be okay. That's just silly to even contemplate the fact that he wouldn't. And then, of course, on Saturday night, he passed away, and I got the news Sunday morning, and it just, I still think it hasn't quite hit me. I did his show with him every Thursday, just a little segment, and I was grateful for that because we got to at least sort of have this regular interval where we're talking and keeping in touch with each other, and we had so much fun talking about politics, and he always made sure to give some love to the podcast, to the Undivided podcast, because he knew, I've been trying to grow this business and trying to grow this mission and this movement. And he was, that's the reason he gave me a weekly little spot on his show, is he has this huge audience, and he wanted me to be able to come on and talk about what we were going to discuss and cover on the podcast. And he wanted to send people to my Patreon and just be part of helping support me, which he'd done for the last 13 years, the last 12, 13 years that we knew each other. It's just anything he could do, just jumped at the opportunity to be able to support me in my endeavors. It's just who he was. I wanted to play for you. I had Dory on this show a couple months ago. He was our first ever episode of Fridays with Friends, which he was tickled by. At first he was offended, thinking that you have a segment called Fridays with Friends and I've never been on it. And I was like, no, this is our first one. So I wanted to play just a little portion of this for you because it was such a wonderful conversation. And his advice is just still so, so sound about, you know, how he was able to build this successful show, but also how he was able to deal with some of the hate that came along with it. Being a host who, I mean, he'll tell you he wasn't conservative or anything. I think he talks about it here, but a host who was further to the right in a city like Seattle, and just the vitriol and stuff that he got as a result, and how he kind of dealt with that and took it in stride. And so I just wanted to replay just a few minutes of the conversation we had with Dory here on the Undivided podcast just a couple months ago.
There are a lot of people who their politics is their life, and I really feel sorry for them. I truly believe that I would go nuts. Everything I talk about on the radio, I 100% sincerely believe. I mean, we wouldn't get the kind of listeners we have if there was any phoniness involved. I believe it, but I would go crazy if that's all I thought about. And, you know, I get there are a couple people, and they send me hate emails at 8 p.m. and at 3 a.m. and at 7 a.m. And I feel so sorry for them. Now, I mean, just the fact that around the clock, they are obsessed with disagreeing with me about issues. And I really do feel bad for people like that. And that's why I choose not to live my life like that. I'm passionate. I spend 12 hours a day preparing and performing the radio show, but I have to have some time where I'm thinking about other stuff, or else we're all going to go nuts.
Well, yeah. And you're right. I mean, you'll see people on Facebook who they hate what you're talking about, but they're always there. And it's like, why, if you hate it so much, why are you soaking in it? It's very confusing to me.
Right.
I agree. It's really sad. But in case there's anybody watching this who isn't familiar with you and your show and your career, just give a brief, and I'm assuming most people will be, but brief explainer about what your show is about. And the ratings are really off the charts right now, right?
Yeah, they're crazy. Yeah, I have 27 years, and they're the highest by far. I mean, we've been really good for 26 years, but for the last year and a half, it's been just amazing. The show's about I really consider every listener an individual friend. And the show's about what I would talk about with my friends if I was talking politics. So I spend, you know, probably 6 to 9 hours finding interesting stuff that interests me. And then I just try to find entertaining or unique ways to tell those stories. And, you know, my viewpoint, I think I said this to you a couple of weeks ago, because people say, you know, you're conservative, you're libertarian. And in fact, I did say it to you. No, I'm a Dorytarian, which all it means is I look at every story, I give my honest opinion on it. And sometimes it's not going to fit a box. It's not going to, you know, because I think people who identify as conservative, they see some news story and they say, okay, I have to put this in my conservative box, and now I'm going to make my opinion fit that. And that's not a way to be sincere. That's not a way to be authentic with people. So I just give my opinion, and I don't care which box it falls in. Sometimes, once in a while, it even falls in my liberal box.
Oh, you have a liberal box?
Oh, yeah. It's tidy, but I have it. It's the one I keep a dime in. The other one's the one I can keep bricks in. But yes, yeah.
Well, and your show has always been branded as a watchdog of government. And given what we've gone through in the last 2 years with the pandemic and, you know, government overreach, do you think that's why it's doing so well right now? Or what do you attribute that to?
I think that we are in a time where people are very, very frustrated, especially after the last couple of years. They didn't like being ordered to wear masks. I mean, just on Friday, just today as we record this, the CDC says they are approving injections for 5-year-olds and under. And there are an awful lot of people who think that that's nuts. I happen to be one of them. I'm not anti-vax in the slightest. I'm boosted. I think it's crazy to inject stuff into three-year-olds. If you have a three-year-old and they have made it to, you know, mid-June of 2022 and they're fine, why in the world would somebody inject them at this point? So I say stuff like that that I think an awful lot of people think and feel and believe, and they see in the media elsewhere people who have shaped their opinion because too many people say that they have to be pro-vax. I'm pro-vax if it makes sense for you. In my age group, I'm pro-vax. For a three-year-old, I'm anti. And so, you know, maybe that's even a slight little nuance that I don't just have, you know, one opinion about this vaccine. I have one opinion about vaccines for me, and I have another opinion about vaccines for kids. I think it's that approach, because there are a lot of people who just are not. And you happen to be, along with me, you know, our friend Jason Rand, we're all voices of, I think, common sense right now. And it's because we don't try to just fit a liberal narrative.
All right, Dory Monson, I appreciate you. I appreciate your friendship. And just always remember, you are on my first Fridays with Friends.
That's something nobody can take away from me.
And, you know, one of the, if anything, and I know there are some of you who didn't know Dory, and but I think there's so many lessons that we can take away from him and so much that we can learn from him. You know, one of the things that I think I could offer about all of this is just don't wait to say something or do something that you've been wanting to do. You know, my fiance and I, we had been planning to ask Dory to officiate our wedding. And we had this whole plan in place because I was on Dory's show every Thursday. And the next segment in the new year, when Dory was back from his vacation, my fiance was going to join me and pop on the phone, and we were going to surprise him and ask him to officiate our wedding. And, you know, I'll never forget myself that I didn't ask him sooner. Just, I mean, I know he knew how much I loved him and cared about him, but, you know, I think he would have just been so tickled that we wanted him to be there for our big day and that we wanted him to marry us. And he was had told me in an unrelated thing just a few months ago that he'd never officiated a wedding. And so it was sort of like, oh, we're going to have him be give his first shot at officiating. And so I'm just devastated that I never told him like that's that we wanted him to be there. I want to read a couple comments, and the comments have just been absolutely pouring in. And thank you all for your well wishes. I got just a ton of text messages and emails and comments. And so I absolutely appreciate that. And it's just been, I think, really important to hear what he meant to all of you. Because Dory had this way, and as you heard him say there in that interview, he looked at every single listener as his friend. And he looked at the show as, what kind of political stories would I talk to my friends about? And that really came through on the other side of the radio, just reading your comments about how much he meant to you, even for those of you who never met him before. Curtis wrote, "My drive to work will forever be changed. I can't tell you how much I looked forward to his time on the radio. These will be immeasurable shoes to fill. I'm so sad for his family and all of us listeners that depend on his watchdog attitude." JJ wrote, "We will miss him and his tireless search for the truth and giving a voice to many needing help." Christy, "He was a voice of reason we need so desperately here in Western Washington." Rob wrote, "He was a beacon of light in the darkness and a voice to the voiceless and one of common sense in our divisions." Patty says, "I was stunned by this news. I listened to Dory often, although I did not always agree." I didn't even always agree with Dory, Patty, so we're on the same page there. She wrote, "His passion for holding government and politicians accountable was what I admired about him." Jolie wrote, "I can't even bear to think he is gone. Wow, it's like the lights went out on the Space Needle. He was such an inspiration, speaking out on what is not right with our government and our state." Becky said, "My entire household is going to miss him dearly. We are all shocked to hear of his passing." And then this comment really stuck out to me because it was so simple, but I think it speaks to a larger point that I really want you guys to understand. J. Seattle wrote, "I'm just a listener and I'm devastated. I'm just a listener and I'm devastated." there was no such thing as just a listener to Dory Monson. You are the reason he did the show. You are the reason he loved doing the show. You're the reason he worked 12, sometimes 14 hours a day putting the show together. And when Dory took on this effort of being a watchdog of government, he was doing that for the listeners. And he also wanted the listeners to come along and to take that example and to be a watchdog of government themselves. And that's what's so important here is, you know, Dory is gone. And it's going to take some time to kind of wrap my mind around that. But he leaves a huge void behind. There simply are not that many voices in Washington State who are doing what he did. The good news is, though, he had hundreds of thousands of fans who believed in what he was doing, who believed in the media's role to be a watchdog of government, who believed that the government needed to be accountable to the people. And every single one of you who loved his show, who appreciated what he did, you can carry that mission forth as well. You know, that is a very important voice that is gone. There is no replacing him. There is no doubt about that. It puts a big void in the media environment here. That's one less person out of not very many willing to hold the majority party in Washington State accountable. But it's almost like all these years, these 30 years, he's been training you to do just that, to expect more from government, regardless of political party, to demand more from government, to demand accountability and transparency and honesty. And so that's what his legacy can be. That's what we can do for Dory. Is we can continue fighting for the state that he fought for all those years. You know, Dory, some people would say he was angry on the radio. It's like, well, anyone who cares about the state ought to be angry. Anyone who cares about his hometown of Seattle ought to be angry at the state of things. And we can take his mission, take what he tried to do on the show, and we can carry that forth in our day-to-day lives. Whether it's emailing elected leaders, sharing news stories, emailing news outlets about what they are or are not covering or how they cover things. Because you've got this Dory army of hundreds of thousands of people in Washington State who can help fill the role that he played, the very important role that he played here. There will never be another Dory Monson. But his fight and his enthusiasm and his love of this state lives on in every single one of us. I will have much more to say this week about my friend Dory Monson, about the legacy he leaves behind, and about what we do in his absence, how we carry forth his mission to hold the government accountable. The following segment is brought to you in partnership with Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. It is a new year. That means New Year's resolutions. No, I'm not going to list off my New Year's resolutions. I already put those in my Sunday newsletter. So if you want to read them, you can go read them there. But I did an op-ed for Future 42 for our partnership that posted over the weekend of 5 New Year's resolutions for Washington State lawmakers, because I just don't think that they're going to come up with their own. So we kind of need to come up with some for them. And I thought it would be fun today to count down the top resolutions that I believe lawmakers should take on in 2023. Number 5, put aside performative politics. I talk a lot about performative politics. Here's what I define that as. Something you do for appearances rather than actual effect. Something that is not based on need or necessity. And there are a ton of bills that get introduced every year where I'm like, do we need that? Do we need that? Is there any? There's nothing saying you have to go to Olympia and pass new bills. Like, it's not a contest to see who can pass the most bills. Well, maybe it is, but it shouldn't be. And I see dumb things like House Bill 1020, which was pre-filed last month. And it is an act that would designate Susiosaurus rex as the official state dinosaur. Okay? Look, I get it. Dinos are fun. You know, they make us get in touch with our inner child, the wannabe paleontologist in all of us. But I don't understand why it has to be in a bill. And you might say, well, Brandy, it's just fun. They're probably doing it for kids and you just put this through and pass it. No, every single bill does require effort. It requires effort and time to write, to get into committee, to move forward, to take votes on, for the governor to sign. Even a bill as surface level as this one does consume the time of lawmakers. And it is my belief that we cannot seriously commit ourselves to solving the state's most pressing crises, crises that are actually impacting people's lives every single day, like homelessness, drug abuse, crime, unless we do away with the performative politics. That includes the dinosaur bill and any other similar bills they might come up with this legislative session. Number four on my list of New Year's resolutions that Washington state lawmakers should adopt this year is to make good on their election year promises. This is something that we discussed a lot in 2022, the fact that you had all of a sudden Democrats who came out and cared about crime in the lead up to the November election. And for most of us who can see through that kind of stuff, we're like, all right, let's see how long that lasts. Let's see if that lasts into the new year. I mean, Governor Jay Inslee, who never commented on police defunding, came out and said, I'm opposed to police defunding. He was like, where were you 2 years ago? Attorney General Bob Ferguson, who didn't say anything while stores were being looted in Seattle and Bellevue, came out 2 years too late and put forth a retail theft task force. And then you had certain swing district Democrats who were going to have tight races to keep their seats last year, who supported some of these misguided police reform efforts that were passed in 2021, but came out on the campaign trail and said, okay, you know, we need to scale some of these back. One of them was State Senator Emily Randall, the Democrat from Bremerton. Well, she kept her seat. And do you think that I'm seeing a bill filed in Olympia by Emily Randall to fix the police pursuit law? Do you think I've seen a bill in Olympia filed by Emily Randall or the majority party for that matter to make it so that illicit drug possession can be a felony in Washington state again? No. And so I do still think there's time before the legislative session for them to make good on the promises they made on the campaign trail and prove to us that it wasn't just lip service to win an election, but I will say that I'm not going to hold my breath. Number three on my list of 2023 New Year's resolutions that Washington state lawmakers should adopt is prioritizing checks and balances. I've said that one of the biggest things I think needs to happen this legislative session is for lawmakers to really finally address emergency power reform. We had on the show last week Democratic Senator Mark Mullett and Republican Senator Linda Wilson, who have proposed a bipartisan bill that would put very reasonable checks and balances on this governor or a future governor's emergency power. And that is that in a time of emergency, you have more power in the legislature to be able to come together and end it if you have an executive who's abusing his authority. To me, it should be non-controversial. It should be an absolute priority. I don't see the downside to it. And hopefully now that we're officially out of the pandemic, it's something that there is the political will for the majority party to take on. Number two on my list of 2023 New Year's resolutions for state lawmakers is to find a way to reward good behavior. It has been a really hard 2 years for Washingtonians. I mean, everyone across the country, but also for Washingtonians. We've seen the cost of gas through the roof. We have been dealing with inflation. I mean, mothers not having medicine for their kids available at the store, not having formula available for their kids. We, of course, went through the pandemic and businesses shut down. Nowhere during that did Washington state lawmakers find a way to give Washingtonians a tax break. Not a break on the gas tax, not a little break in the sales tax. You know, you could talk about and look at things like the price of gas and say, oh, well, you know, it's out of state lawmakers' hands how high gas is. But it's not out of their hands to try to let Washingtonians keep a little bit more of their money. And I think why it's particularly prudent for them to find a way, and why I say reward good behavior, is they've already pre-filed bills that would reward bad behavior. There is a bill that has been pre-filed that would raise the pay for Washington state prison inmates. There is a bill that has been filed that would make it so that a court cannot force an inmate to help offset the cost of their incarceration, which means that the cost of their incarceration will be borne entirely by the taxpayers. To me, you're finding ways to reward criminals. And look, I get it. You want to make sure people come out of prison. They're in a good position. I support all that. But if you can find creative ways to help make criminals' lives a little bit easier, I think it's not asking too much to find some creative ways to make the lives of law-abiding Washingtonians a little bit easier. And the number one New Year's resolution that I would like to see Washington state lawmakers adopt is to spend more time reaching across the aisle. Of course, that's very in keeping with the theme of undivided. But I also think that we are in this incredibly toxic political climate across the nation. I mean, Congress, to me, has become borderline worthless. They are so focused on hating each other, the two parties, they can't get anything done. And I think Washington State can be a good example for the rest of the country about what bipartisanship can get you, what you can accomplish by working together. And they don't get enough credit, but the vast majority of bills in Olympia are passed on a bipartisan basis. Of course, those are the bills that are far less controversial. It's the controversial ones where you see this huge divide and that make the news, and I get that. So maybe it is contingent on us in the media to celebrate some of the bipartisan wins as well. So I'll commit myself to doing that this legislative session. But again, things are toxic enough on the national level. I really think that Washington state lawmakers can set an example and show everyone how important and how productive bipartisanship can really be. So those are my top five New Year's resolutions that I would like to see Washington state lawmakers adopt this year. The previous segment was brought to you in partnership with Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. I've been saying for a long time about these studies that are like the American Academy of Pediatrics or whatever it is, and they'll release some study on some topic that's like, did anybody even care to know about that? Is this just like a concept that you put into your mind and then you said, let's do a study to try to confirm this weird thing that we just thought of? And I just like want to defund all these institutions that do these dumb studies. Like, remember the one that, God, what the freak was it? It was done in Canada by like a reputable medical center in Canada, reputable, quote unquote. And it found some sort of link. It said there was a link between your chances of getting injured in a car accident and your COVID-19 vaccine status. It was like if you were unvaccinated, it showed a pattern of behavior and contempt for the government and rules, so you were more likely to get into a car accident. It's just like, you guys stop. I cannot believe some of these, and they're like government funding that goes into them. So this one was just as bad. We've talked about the violence problem and how in Olympia, they're trying to push new gun control measures as a way to deal with what is typically a gang violence problem. We are nearing a record for homicides in Washington state. There are a lot of cities like that across the country. We have a huge rise in shootings, both fatal shootings and shootings where someone's injured. And it's like, you want to push a bill in Washington state that would require people to get a permit to buy a handgun. There's no gang members. Do I have to bring back your friendly neighborhood gang member impression that's going to get a permit for his gun? Ridiculous. So it's like, you have this effort to just come up with any possible reason for the violence except the reason for the violence. And this is another example. So the Kansas City Star put out this headline that's been getting a little bit of attention today. Is climate change linked to gun violence? A new study shows how the Kansas City area is impacted. Okay. I just don't even really know how to start on this. I'm going to get to the study in a moment. It was from the Journal of the American Medical Association. And this Kansas City thing gets into the fact that there was a really hot day. On the hottest day of 2022 in Kansas City, three people were shot and killed. Three more were shot and survived. It was 101 degrees that day. And so they're saying, well, does the heat have something to do with the fact that a lot of people were shot? And here's, I will acknowledge, in the summer months, this has always been true. And anyone who's covered any amount of crime or really been in journalism in a local market ever knows this. In the summer months, crime goes up. And it's because in the summer months, when the weather is nicer, you have more people out gathering in groups. That's why we see more violence on Elkhai Beach in Seattle in the summer months, because people are gathered on the beach. It has nothing to do with how hot it is. Like, you could have an 80 degree day, people would still be on Alki Beach in the summer. And so it's just, this whole narrative is bizarre to me. Like, yes, nice weather has a link to violence. That has always been true. But now they want to try to tie it to climate change. which, for the love of God. So this is, again, a study published in the Journal of the American Medical Association. And they analyzed more than 116,000 shootings across 100 American cities and found that nearly 7% could be attributed to days with above average temperatures. So first of all, 7% of these shootings across 7% of 116,000 shootings in 100 cities were tied, happened on days with above average temperatures. And you think that that is a somehow significant statistic? You have to be kidding me. So I went and I looked at the study itself. So here are the key points that the researchers make. They say the question they're trying to solve in the study is, are higher temperatures associated with increased risk of a firearm shooting? Findings, and this is their summary of the findings. In this cross-sectional analysis of the 100 cities with largest burden of firearm shootings in the U.S., 6.85% of all shootings were associated with above average temperatures. And then they have a little line that says the meaning, so the takeaway, like what we need to do. These findings indicate a need for heat adaptation strategies for mitigation of risk of firearm shootings. What on God's green earth are you talking about? This is crazy. I cannot with these people. Okay, so it says, and it gets into the abstract of the study. I just want to make sure that we kind of all understand what they're... And I really do think you had researchers who came into this and said, how can we tie climate change to murder? And then found a way to try to do it. They said the importance of this study is that firearm violence is a leading public health crisis in the U.S. Understanding whether and how ambient temperature is associated with firearm violence may identify new avenues for prevention and intervention. Put people in prison who use guns. Don't give them sweetheart deals when people who are actual criminals use firearms in the commission of a crime. Objective, to estimate the overall and regional association between hotter temperatures and higher risk of firearm violence in the U.S. So, and I already got into the results of it. Again, 7% of nearly 116,000 shootings across 100 cities happened on days where the temperature was above average. And their takeaway from that is that the 7% that's so significant that we need a, quote, heat adaptation strategy for mitigation of risk and firearm shootings. And I really believe it's probably only a matter of time before you hear officials in cities like Seattle and Washington State say, oh, climate change is causing crime, rather than blame it on, oh, gosh, I don't know, the push to defund the police, a mass exodus of 400 police officers, not enough officers to go out and do proactive policing, laws in Washington state that, for example, made it nearly impossible to pursue a vehicle, even in cases where you have an obvious stolen vehicle that might be fleeing from the scene of a crime. Gosh, what else can I think of? Could the fact that the legislature has made it nearly impossible to have an intervention with someone who's using drugs and you can't hold prison over their head as a possible backup to them getting help, could that have something to do with the crime crisis? Man, I really wonder if there's any other excuse for the crime crisis than climate change. Health is really on my mind today for obvious reasons, but also it's the start of the new year. I think it's really common to have a New Year's resolution to lose weight. But as you guys know, I've been losing and I have lost a significant amount of weight in the last 2 months. And so I actually thought today was a really good day to announce that we're adding a new sponsor to the show. And it's because I wanted to lose my COVID weight, right? And this was like November of last year when I was like, I've got to do something. I've gained. And by the way, speaking of, friends don't let friends gain 40 pounds. I love you guys. I know you love me. I know you are always respectful. But somebody couldn't have told me, Brandy, you're gaining a lot of weight. I would have been okay with that. And man, so like end of September, I looked at a photo of me. I was in Vegas with friends and my fiance. And I remember feeling like, oh, I look fine this day. You know, we're out and about. And then I looked at this picture, I was like, oh my God, I have gained so much weight. I couldn't believe it. And so I started to look for ways to kind of get healthy. And I heard an ad on the radio for Eastside Weight Loss Clinic. And it's just right down the street from my studio. And I thought, gosh, maybe that's something that I ought to try. And so I started at the beginning of November and the weight just melted. I have lost 25 pounds since I started on November 6th. And it has been, you know, for me, I require structure. I require structure and accountability in a diet. And so it's really helped to feel like I'm accountable to someone else besides just myself. And the other thing is, this one has no prepackaged meals on the plan. I don't have to drink any gross shakes or anything. Don't have to count calories. Don't have to exercise, although I tried to get as many steps in as I could. And you can just do it at home. You can do it virtually. So you don't have to go into a doctor's office and, you know, get weighed every day or whatever. And so I was so impressed with the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan that I was like, let's do a sponsorship on the show. Because I know I have so many folks who want to get in shape for the new year and have already been asking me, Brandy, what'd you do to lose all this weight? So starting today, Eastside Weight Loss Clinic is going to be a sponsor of ours on the Undivided podcast. I'm really excited to have them. I have about 15 pounds more to go. I talked earlier about that picture that I saw that was like my genesis for being like, I have to do something. And then I was looking at pictures I took when I was back in Vegas for a country music concert last month. And the difference is just night and day. It's just night and day. And so, and I will say also, the hardest part for me about starting this weight loss program was the first time I weighed myself. The scale to me has been like a terrifying thing. This program has destigmatized it for me. And stepping on the scale the first time was horrifying because I didn't want to know how bad I let myself go. But after that, I was like, okay, now I know. And now I can move forward. And everything else since then has been so freaking rewarding. I can't even stand it. And I'm so excited because I'm going wedding dress shopping this month. And I feel so much better about myself. So if you would like to get a free consultation, you can call Dr. Coogan at 425-354-3020. That's 425-354-3020. Or visit eastsideweightlossclinic.com. That's eastsideweightlossclinic.com. Tell them you heard about them on the Undivided podcast. And just chat with Dr. Coogan. See if the program is right for you. And before you know it, you could be on your way to a better 2023, a better new year, and just feeling much better about yourself. If you do start the program, by the way, let me know. Because it's always easier when you have partners in crime to talk about, you know, the ups and downs and the challenges. So certainly drop me a message or an email and let me know if you end up starting. But welcome, Eastside Weight Loss Clinic, to the Undivided podcast. We're so happy to have you as a sponsor. Thank you again for joining me on the show today. As I said, I wasn't sure if I wanted to do the show today. Yesterday was really tough. And, you know, I think what got me in the studio today was that Dory never missed an episode of a show. Like, taking vacation was so rare for him because he just had this drive and this commitment to put the best possible show and product together every single day for his listeners. I mean, his commitment to that was unmatched. There were no days where Dory just phoned it in and said, I'm just going to wing it today. He did not do that. He never did that in almost 30 years. And so I was like, you know what? I'm going to channel Dory Monson today. And I'm going into that damn studio and I'm doing my show today. And I'm so glad I did. And I'm just, again, been so touched by how many of you have reached out to offer your sympathy, but also just to share what Dory meant to you. And he would have, I think he knew what a special, special audience he'd built. And the comments coming in are just so indicative of that. Dana wrote on Patreon, I didn't agree with him much of the time, but would listen to him from time to time to gain perspective, which is awesome. I wish more people did that. I remember a recent interview did with him, and he talked about how sad it was that people couldn't separate their politics from their lives and were so wrapped up in their hate that they no longer could be happy. We all need to learn that lesson. And yeah, you just heard it. I played that portion of it because that really stood out to me too when we had that conversation because, you know, I'm attacked a lot online. You can't share your opinion for a living and not be hated by some people. That's just the environment that we're living in. But it's a really important lesson, like you said, for everyone to say, look, you know, there are going to be people out there who you vehemently disagree with, who don't like you because of your politics, don't care to get to know you. And the easiest thing that you can do is just sort of let it slide and just focus on being happy and living your life and not absorb yourself, obsess yourself with politics. And that's really, you know, we talk about politics on this show, but I hope you find that we talk about it in a way that isn't going to get you infuriated and angry and ruin your day, because we can talk about all these important issues, have fun, and also not start hating people of the other political party. It is possible. I just want to read a couple more comments, his comments about Dory as we close the show. Julianne said, when my husband came in the room to tell me of Dory's passing, he had been crying. I joined him. I didn't know it was possible to love someone so much without ever meeting them. We appreciated his efforts to save our beloved state from the self-serving leaders who have been voted in. He was a voice for common sense and gave us hope for the future. Yeah. David said, I feel his recognizable voice was one of reason and honor. I am sorry for his family and friends' loss. He left a legacy in Seattle. Becky, we are all shocked to hear of his passing. Thank you for memorializing him. No one will be able to fill the void he has left. The love of his state, his family, his listeners, his voice for those of us that shared his values. So again, thank you. Those words mean everything to me, to I know those who were close to Dory. And like I said, in the days ahead on the show, I want to be talking about how we can continue that legacy, how we can continue his legacy of fighting for the state that he loved, for the city that he loved, and really just encouraging people to expect more of government, to demand more of government, and to remember that a government is supposed to be of the people, by the people, for the people. So to my friend Dory Monson, I love you. You meant so much to me over these last 12, 13 years. I couldn't have asked for a better mentor, a better friend. You were like a father to me. I'm devastated that you won't be there for my wedding and just for everything to come and for your daughters and for your wife. And I have learned so much from you. I would not be the person I am today. I would not be the woman I am today without you and your guidance and your love and your support.